So really happy, and you know, School of Bhakti, Bhaktivedanta Mana, and all of you in the UK, it really feels like being at home when I'm around all of you. I hope we'll have some nice discussion. I beg for the permission of His Holiness Satchidananda Maharaj, His Grace Buddha Bhavana Prabhu, who are just allowing me to add a little bit into the main course of the spiritual discussion. And yeah, please be open, please be free. At certain times in the session, I'll just stop and we can really just have a little bit of a discussion. I would really appreciate you being very open. Somehow, someone asked me recently, how has life changed since sannyas? It's like the classic question at the end of every class now. No one asked me that question. But I was saying, it's funny because somehow I feel like people are more nervous around me. That makes me really nervous. So please don't be nervous. Here I am, the same person, a work in progress. But I hope we can have some open-hearted discussion. At the beginning, I asked you all to just meditate on one thing that has driven your journey, one thing that has given you the faith to walk this journey to Vrindavan. And I asked you to boil it down to one word. Want to shout out a word that came to you? Srila Prabhupada.
Krishna.
Books, the books, the Shastra.
Devotees.
Peace. We all need some peace.
Happiness.
Kirtan.
Experience.
Radha-kund. Wow.
Bliss.
Mercy. Yes.
Prashad.
That's what I was writing for. Yeah, so many things are driving forward our journey. So when we were discussing what we would explore on this retreat, then one of the themes that came up was faith. And so I was thinking, what will I share with you about faith? It's such a big topic. It can be an extremely intellectual topic. It can be a topic which we can explore from many different angles, but today and tomorrow I will explore it from an angle that is very dear to me, and I hope I will give you a little bit of my own heart in discussing this topic. When I think about faith, there's many things we could talk about what builds faith. But this is what I would boil it down to as the most important thing that I feel will help us all to develop our faith in Krishna consciousness. But before I tell you what that is, I just want to share with you a beautiful story that I always remember of Bhavananda Prabhu, who once had taken the details of Srila Prabhupada's birth and gone to Navadvip to an astrologer. And he had taken details of Prabhupada's birth, his time, his place, and all of these things. And he had gone to the Navadvip astrologer to have Prabhupada's astrology done. And when the Navadvip astrologer saw the details of Srila Prabhupada and did his analysis, he was astounded. He says, "This man has the power to build a house in which the whole world can live." And so Bhavananda Prabhu came back and he explained to Prabhupada what he had done. And Prabhupada said, "What did the astrologer say?" Bhavananda Prabhu said, "Prabhupada, he said, you can build a house in which the whole world can live." Prabhupada said, "That's a fact." In the deepest humility, Prabhupada said, "That's a fact. That is my mission. To build a house in which the whole world can live." We sometimes have different analogies of ISKCON. Sometimes we call ISKCON is like an army base from which we all get training to then go out and create a spiritual revolution in the world.
I can tell you sometimes ISKCON feels like an army base. When I joined the temple, Shri Damodaru, I said, Prabhu, can you give me some advice? He said, when the alarm clock goes off, get up, dress up, and show up. I was like, okay. It is an army camp. ISKCON is sometimes like a hospital, isn't it? We're all getting better, we all have our nartas, our conditionings, and therefore we're all here, nartha nivritti, all getting better in the hospital. Sometimes we can say ISKCON is like a school. We learn many lessons of spiritual life. In ISKCON you can see everything, the good, the bad, and the other stuff as well. You can see everything. But my question to you is, do you live in an army base your whole life? Do you live in a hospital for your whole life? Do you live in a school for your whole life? These are all good metaphors, but they don't encapsulate what really ISKCON is. Actually, ISKCON is meant to be a house in which the whole world can live. ISKCON is meant to be a home. ISKCON is meant to be a family. And therefore, what I want to share with you today and tomorrow is something I've been thinking about a lot, which is, how do we develop a community of love? Because for me, this is what's going to increase everyone's faith more than anything else. A community of love. Here we find a beautiful quote. This is from the 4th canto, 30th chapter, where the Lord appears to the Prachetas. Here these figures in this round circle are the Prachetas. And what had happened is that their father, Prachina Barishat, he had told them that I want you to procreate in the universe. And therefore, in order to do that, they had gone underwater for 10,000 years together, all of them. And the 10 Prachetas all went underwater and did austerities. And when they emerged after their 10,000 years of austerity, the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord didn't commend them for their austerities. The Lord didn't commend them for their discipline. The Lord didn't commend them for all that hardship that they had undergone underwater for 10,000 years. What was the Lord most impressed by? My dear sons of the King, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. The thing that impressed the Lord most is that they had friendly relationships amongst each other. Underwater for 10,000 years, they had created a community of love. Can you imagine living with someone for 10,000 years? That was one of the reasons I took sannyas. You know Woody Allen, he's a comedian. He says, me and my wife, we have different cars. We live in different homes. We have different jobs, different hobbies, we eat at different times. We're doing everything we can to keep our relationship together. It's very interesting because in this day and age when people come together, how many problems? Who can live together? Even after this retreat. You may be happy to have a break, you know, sometimes. It's like that. Kali Yuga is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. It's said by one of our commentators that because there's so much ego within us, so much ego, when that ego comes out in the private forum, then it manifests as hypocrisy. Because you show something to the world, you're actually something else, but because of ego, you can't be honest. And therefore, when ego comes out in the private context, it comes out as hypocrisy. And when the ego within us comes out in the public context, then it comes out as quarrel. So if you ever wondered why quarrel and hypocrisy are the two characteristics of Kali Yuga, it's all driven by the ego within us that then comes out in different ways according to the context. And so it's so difficult to create a community of love. This is the biggest challenge for all of us. This is the biggest test of our spirituality, that if someone comes into our community, they will be able to say, these people are different. This community is different. When I'm amongst these people, I feel completely different. That is the real test of our Krishna consciousness. And so, if we're able to create a community of love, then that will not only attract many people to come, but that is what will actually keep us in the Krishna consciousness movement. But not just keep us in the Krishna consciousness movement, keep us moving forward. I've shared this before, and many of you may know, there is something called the 10-80-10 rule. You know about this? This is a fascinating rule that can apply to many, many different things in life. The 10-80-10 rule counts for the composition of any group of people. So say, for example, if you take a corporate organization, then it's said that there are 10 people in that, 10% of people in that organization who are basically just waiting to leave. Yeah. There are 10 people who are waiting to leave. They're already looking for their next job. They're already dissatisfied. They're just biding their time and they're about to go. Then there are 10% of people who are really into what that company does. They're driven. They believe in it. They're ready to work all hours for it. And the other 80% are basically just there for the money. They're not really interested in the company. They're not really interested in others. But anyway, I'm here because I get money. Let me just be here. In a company, 10-80-10. In any given community, there's 10-80-10. 10 believe, really, they own that community. Another 10 are kind of like, you know, they're just there because it's like there's nothing better to do. And the large majority, 80%, are just there because it fulfills some social need, but they're not really into it. And then even in a spiritual organization, it's said that 10 are really about to leave. 10 are flying. And the majority are casual. The majority are kind of just doing it as a social thing. And so how does this relate to our topic of faith? In any given community, it's said that it's likely that 10% are becoming faithless. They're losing their faith. Ashraddhana. Shraddha is the Sanskrit word for faith. So, rid means the heart. Dha means to place. So, Shraddha literally means to put your heart into something. So, 10% of people generally in any given community are losing their faith. They're losing their heart. They're losing their will to do it. Maybe they've already lost their will to do it and they're about to give up Krishna consciousness. And then it's said that 10% have what you call svabhaviki shraddha, natural or spiritual faith, strong faith, faith which is coming from the deepest place in their heart. But the majority of people are having what you call lokika shraddha, or cultural or popular faith. Now this is incredibly, incredibly important to understand. When we talk about this, the first thing is we shouldn't use this to judge anyone. Don't look around the room and say, yeah, that guy is in the tent. He's in the room. He's in the room. And I'm going to tell you why this is actually, I'm going to show you actually a very empowering perspective in this in a minute. What is the difference between, most of us
are having some shraddha, otherwise why would we spend so much money to come here? Apart from people like me who come for free. You have shraddha. So now the question is, do I have laukika shraddha or svabhaviki shraddha? Then one has to ask, what is the difference between cultural or popular faith and natural or spiritual faith? What differentiates those two things? This is talked about by Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha. So essentially, if we were to boil it down to its most essential characteristics, the basis of these two shraddhas or types of faith and the goal of these two types of faith is what differentiates them. So the basis of laukika shraddha, someone who has popular faith, where are they getting their faith from? Culture, tradition, and generally people around them. What is the basis of someone who's having svabhaviki shraddha? Their faith is coming from shastra, transcendental knowledge, and deep spiritual inspiration and experience that's going on within them. What is the goal of someone who has laukika shraddha? Their goal is to have a happy and comfortable life in the here and now. What is the goal of someone who has svabhaviki shraddha? They want to go back to Godhead, back home, back to Vrindavan. Now, when you hear those two things, you may think, yeah, I think I have svabhaviki shraddha. I want to go to Vrindavan. And yes, I like Prabhupada's books. I like, I have experience of Krishna consciousness. But it's not so easy. It's not so clear. Generally, for all of us, it will be a mix of these two things. But where is your, what is the strong basis of your faith? Is it because you are convinced by the words of Krishna, by the words of the Guru, by the words of the Shastra? Is that what is driving your journey? When you wake up in the morning, do you think, what will I do today that's going to take me on this journey back home, back to Godhead? Or is that just a thought that you get when you're in a class sometimes and you feel inspired, or when something goes wrong in life and you think, I don't like this world, I want to go somewhere else? Is it really the constant thing on our mind that we are thinking, how will I get out of this world? How will I go back to Krishna? One who has svabhaviki shraddha, that is the main thing on their mind. Every single desire, every single decision, every single direction that they take in life is driven by how does it take me closer to this goal. So now you can see svabhaviki shraddha is something very, very high. Something very, very unique. Something very, very rare. Therefore, Krishna says, Manushyanam saha shreshu kashkit yadati siddhaye yadatam api siddhanam kashkin maam veti tatvata. Out of many thousands of people in this world, one may endeavor for perfection. And out of many who are achieving perfection, maybe one will attain the goal of Krishna in Vrindavan. So, probably when most of us look at our hearts and lives, we will say, maybe I have more laukika shraddha than svabhaviki shraddha. But laukika shraddha will not take you to the place in which you will feel the incredible fulfillment and complete satiation of the heart that comes from a loving relationship with Krishna. We have to upgrade the level of our shraddha. We have to upgrade the level of our faith. And shall I tell you an amazing thing? Although most communities, most organizations, most spiritual movements are 10-80-10, there are some movements, some companies, some communities which go from being good to being great. And you know how they go from being good to being great? They learn the art of how to transform that 80 and make them into that top category that only 10% are in at the moment. If an organization, a community, or a group of individuals manage to generate an energy by which that 80 can then move towards the higher level, then that organization, that community becomes great, extraordinary. And that is the offer to all of us that Srila Prabhupada gave. That Srila Prabhupada was giving us the opportunity to be in that highest quality of faith. So the first thing we can do today is to spend some time, maybe out there, asking ourselves, where is my faith? First we should say, where am I? And the second important question is, where am I going? Perhaps even more important than the first question is the second question. Where am I going in my faith? What am I doing to invest in my faith? What am I doing to allay my doubts? This is really the biggest question that should be on our minds and in our hearts. How does this relate to the topic of the community of love? My strong conviction from reading Srila Prabhupada's books, and also on top of that, what I've seen in whatever time I've spent in spiritual community, is that it is a community of love, which is the single most important factor which will help us go from Laukika Shraddha to Svabhaviki Shraddha. And so what I want to do to try to open up this topic is share with you some of the qualities of what it means to create a community of love. And why am I sharing this with you? Because creating a community of love is something that each one of us can do. It is not up to the leaders, it's not up to a few people to create the community of love. The poet, the English poet Donne, he says, no man is a social island. By the way we live our life and function with others, we can be contributors to a community of love. And therefore, what I'm going to try to show you is, what does it mean to have a community of love? And what I'm going to try to do is do that by showing you how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu created a community of love. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is an incredible book. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, because what I'm going to show you now is actually, it can be analyzed for hours. But I'm just going to show you it very quickly. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life story is documented in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And you can see it in many ways. And the most basic way we see the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is as a chronological narrative. So Mahaprabhu spent many years in Navadvip. He was Nimai Pandit, and then finally he received the Maha Mantra. It's amazing, when God comes as a devotee, we even hear how he becomes a devotee. Isn't it? When you meet a devotee, often the first thing you ask is, how did you become a devotee? Right? So even Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, when he documents Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, he explains how he became a devotee. Japite japite mantra, korite pagal. I got the mantra and I went mad. So then, after Navadvip, we hear about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taking sannyas, and then when he takes sannyas, he goes to South India, and then we hear many chapters of how he's preaching and propagating the Sankirtan movement, and this is the other major geographical place we hear about. Then later on, we hear about how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami about all the principles of Krishna consciousness, and he does this in Prayag and Varanasi, two very, very famous places in India. Then later on, the Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he goes to Jagannath Puri, and he decides to spend the rest of his life in Jagannath Puri. And there he has many interactions with his loving associates, And then finally, in the conclusion of Mahaprabhu's life, he goes to the Gambhira. He retreats from everyone. He retreats from everything. And what he does is he just goes into his internal mood. So now this is very interesting. You can see Chaitanya Charitamrita as a historical narrative, as a sequence of events, as a timeline of different things that happened. But Chaitanya Charitamrita is incredibly deep, because when you go one layer deeper, then you will understand Chaitanya Charitamrita is not just a chronological narrative, but it's also a conceptual narrative. And therefore, one way to look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita conceptually is that what Mahaprabhu first does is he's starting the Sankirtan movement. Later on, what he does is he's spreading the Sankirtan movement. But then later on, what he does is he's structuring the Sankirtan movement. But then later on, what he does is he's solidifying the Sankirtan movement. And then what he does after he's done all of that is he's savoring the Sankirtan movement. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is a complete genius, because as he's narrating to us the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's also narrating something which is incredibly deep for us to understand in terms of the various stages of the Sankirtan movement. And he's also giving extremely deep insight into what needs to be done at every stage in order to make it successful. For our discussion today, we're talking about how do we solidify our faith in Krishna consciousness. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to solidify the Krishna consciousness movement, what does he do? He goes to Jagannath Puri and he spends time with his devotees. And when he spends time with his devotees, what he does is he appreciates many of them for many nice things they're doing, and he corrects many others for mistakes that they're making. And through these interactions, correcting them, appreciating them, interacting with them, in these 13 chapters of the Antya Leela, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is basically creating a community of love. And when you look at how he interacts with everyone and what he teaches through each of those interactions, then you'll be able to understand that there are very, very key principles in building a community of love. Today and tomorrow I will give you 7. Probably there could be 17. I would say there could even be 70. But I will give you the same 7 main ones that stand out to me as to how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu creates this community of love, which will ultimately allow us to take our faith to another level. But before I do that, let me just pause here and see whether anyone may just have any questions or anything they would like clarified on anything I've mentioned so far. So I just kind of opened by talking about how there are different types of faith. And I talked about how for us, the 2 main types of faith are Laukika and Svabhaviki Shraddha. And although we may think we have deep spiritual faith, we may realize it's more a cultural faith. And then I talked about how a community of love is what will ultimately take us to a higher grade of faith. So let me just stop there and see whether so far anyone has any questions, any comments, or would like any clarifications. Yes, I'll go to that. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you. Thank you. I think you referred to it. Maybe I just wanted to sort of understand it a little bit further. The 10-80-10 rule applies to corporates and probably applies at an individual level as well.
Yeah.
And I think you did say that, you know, we are a mixture. Could you just explore that a little bit further? What is the individual being? You know.
So you're saying the 10-80-10 is within the individual as well?
Yes. Yes.
I've never thought about it in that way, but yeah, we can also say like that. Yeah, that would be also another way to look at it. That for 10%, generally for most devotees, 10% of their spiritual life, they might have some crisis time. There are 10% of their time when they're like super inspired, you know, up at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's a 64-round day. And for 80% of our spiritual life, we're just kind of like, yeah, Krishna is there, you know, it's all going on. It's 9 o'clock and I've got 7 rounds left. And so that's the story of our life. That we're struggling, we're having some ecstasy, but for the most part, we're casual. Most spiritual practitioners are not bad practitioners. They're just casual practitioners. And therefore, that casual practice is symptomatic of a Laukika Shraddha. It's symptomatic of a faith. Sometimes people think, why am I so casual in my spiritual life? The underlying feature is that one has a lower degree of faith. And we need to upgrade that faith. Therefore, at one point, Srila Prabhupada was saying, yes, we're bringing so many people, so many new devotees, but now we have to boil the milk. Otherwise, you bring more and more. But if the faith, you see, when you bring more and more, they go to the common denominator. So if the common denominator is Laukika Shraddha, then many people will come, but it will not go beyond that worldly, cultural type of faith. Yes, Krishna consciousness, they're the guys I hang out with, that's my identity. But are you deeply inspired? Are you moving towards the goal of what this is all actually meant for? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. So yes, the 10-80-10 is within us. And then the golden question is, how do we develop that Shraddha? How do we upgrade that Shraddha? And that's what we will explore through the community of love. Is that okay? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Is it true that application of 10-80-10 applies in the material world, and does the organizations like Google, NASA, Indian Space Research Organization, and most of the armies of the world, do they have this love which makes them extraordinary and unusual and better quality organizations?
Yeah. The first thing to realize is that although we're Krishna consciousness movement, that doesn't mean we are free of the influence of what's going on in the world. It's interesting, Srila Prabhupada once he said to a devotee, my mystic ability was that I was able to bring the spiritual world into the material world by creating these communities. But your mystic ability is that you brought the material world back into the spiritual world. That's interesting. Because we sometimes look around at the Hare Krishna movement and it doesn't always look so transcendental. Did you notice? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, the holy dham is like an ocean which is covered by a layer of oil. So if you look very superficially, you will think, oh, it's just an ocean of oil. But when you go a little bit beyond the surface, you can find many jewels. So when I heard that, the first thing I thought is the Hare Krishna movement is like an ocean covered by a thin layer of oil. Because you can look around and you can see the politics, you can see the hypocrisy, you can see all the defects, you can see 10-80-10. You can see all these things and it's real. But beyond that, there's something amazing. But the point I'm making here is that, yes, many of the things we see in the world will also count for us. And the success of the Krishna consciousness movement is if we can change it. instead of being 10-80-10, maybe we could be 10-10-80, and we'll create a new revolution. But in order to become 10-10-80, how are those who are in, most of us, in Laukika Shraddha, how are we going to upgrade it? For that, we need a community of love. And so, yes, there must be love. And your point about, is there actually love in those communities? There must be love. There must be love. And we're going to talk about that, that there can't be a community of love unless the individuals within that community have some love for Krishna. You can't create a community of love by strategy. You can't create a community of love by lots of meetings and systems. You can only create a community of love if you have some love. Therefore, Kaviraj Goswami says, Prema dhana vina vyartha daridra jivan das koi vetan more deha prema dhan. If I don't have love, then I'm considered an impoverished soul. So we must become rich in love, and then we can create a community of love. We'll talk about this. Thank you. Thank you for your question. Anyone here on the ladies' side would like any clarification? Okay. Yeah? Okay. All right. So I move forward. And let us now talk about some of the interactions that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has. How do you create this community of love? I wanted to speak about this because here we are with the school of Bhakti, where Bhaktivedanta Mana, where ISKCON UK, where ISKCON. And we've got to create a community of love. What does it all mean? In the first chapter of the Antya Leela, we hear of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu interacting with Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami is a brilliant personality. From the material point of view, he's just such a genius. He's so materially qualified. And from the spiritual point of view, he's a Manjari from the spiritual world, and he's come to become Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's assistant. So Rupa Goswami meets Mahaprabhu in Ramakeli. Aje hoite dunhar naam rupa sanatan denya chadi denya tomar fate mo raman. Mahaprabhu meets him the first time. He says, Aje hoite dunhar naam, from this day your name will be Rupa. Rupa Goswami, this will be your name. And then he looks at Rupa and he says, Dainya Chadi, Dainya Domar, Fate Mora Man. Give up your humility, because your humility is breaking my heart. Can you imagine? Someone is so humble. You may have that experience sometimes. Someone so humble, they just like, it almost just breaks, like, touches your heart in such a profound way. So Mahaprabhu says, your humility is so deep, it's breaking my heart. I can't handle it. That was Rupa and Sanatan, such deep personalities. Anyway, Mahaprabhu met them. He told them to go to Vrindavan. Rupa went for a few months. He said, I'm missing Mahaprabhu. I need to go and see him again. So Mahaprabhu had arrived in Puri, and then Rupa Goswami came. And Rupa Goswami was so humble that he just stayed away from the Jagannath temple with Haridas Thakur. He was thinking, I'm from a Saraswat Brahmana family, but I did a service in the Muslim government. I have no qualification to go to the Jagannath temple. I'll stay at distance. So here you can see where he's staying. And in the top right hand corner, you can see the Jagannath temple with the flag. So he was staying at distance. Rupa Goswami had been instructed by Mahaprabhu to write. And this is an incredibly profound scene. Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri. He was in front of the Jagannath car at Rath Yatra. And Mahaprabhu was experiencing the deepest emotions of ecstasy. No one could understand what Mahaprabhu was experiencing. But Rupa looked at Mahaprabhu and he could immediately understand what Mahaprabhu was experiencing. So what he did is he went home, he got a palm leaf and he penned a verse explaining the sentiment of Mahaprabhu in front of Jagannath. and he put that verse in the roof of his thatched cottage. Mahaprabhu came, he saw that verse. And when Mahaprabhu read that verse that Rupa Goswami had written, his heart sunk. You can see he is reading the verse. Rupa Goswami can't. He slaps Rupa Goswami and said, "How could you understand my mind?" Have you ever had that experience of someone who can read your mind? It's kind of spooky. Who can understand Krishna's mind? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Vedaham samaditani vartamani charjana bhavishyani jabhutani mamtu vedana kaschana. Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, bhavishyani jabhutani, I know past, present, future, I know every living being, mamtu vedana kaschana, but no one knows me. Mahaprabhu looked at Rupa Goswami and he said, "How did you read my mind?" Mahaprabhu looks at Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and he says, "This person is amazing." Sarvabhauma said, "Because you empowered him. Because you revealed it to him. Therefore he could write all of these things." And then daily Mahaprabhu would come, and what would he do? He would just appreciate Rupa Goswami. He would appreciate all of his devotees. He would speak such beautiful words about their character, about their contributions, about their service. He said that when Mahaprabhu would glorify his devotees, then Panchamukha, he would have five mouths. It was as if he had five mouths. And what was the result of all of that appreciation that Mahaprabhu gave to all of his devotees? Is that they became so empowered. This is the first principle of a community of love. That a community of love is a community in which the modus operandi of one person towards another person is always appreciation, is empowerment, is trying to help others become the best they can become. The material world is the complete opposite. It's all about judgment. It's all about fault finding. It's all about criticism. It's all about bringing people down. But in a spiritual community, everyone is in the mood of appreciating and empowering others to become the best they can. There's this ancient tale, actually. I'll tell you, actually, this just came to my mind. There's this ancient tale of one king who one day decided, "I will give 3 bowls of khichdi to everyone in the kingdom." So he was handing these out personally from the king's hand. So what happened is, it was about midday, the sun was shining, and here was the king giving out all this free khichdi, bowls of khichdi to the people. And as he was giving one bowl of khichdi out, there was a bird which was flying above. And the bird had just caught its food for the day, which was a snake. So the snake was in the beak of the bird, and it was flying over. And just as the bird flew over the king who was holding this bowl of khichdi, the snake, which was in the beak of the bird, from its mouth, because it had just been killed, some venom came out, poison. And it dropped from the snake's mouth, and it went right into that bowl of khichdi. And then the king gave that bowl of khichdi to one person. He ate it on the spot and died. Everyone looked. I mean, their appreciation of the king was up there, like the king giving out 3 bowls of khichdi. And here it was now, someone died from the bowl of khichdi. So then, Yamaraj and Chitragupta were looking at the whole scene. They have to make a judgment. For every action, there's a reaction. So this guy's died. So someone has to get the karma. So who gets the karma? Is it the king? They said yes, because the king gave him the khichdi. But the king had a good motivation. He was just trying to help. He was just being charitable. He was just being kind. He was going the extra mile. He was a welfare worker. How can the king get the karma? No, the king can't get the karma.
No, 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 the bird should get the karma. Because it was the bird that was flying over and the snake that was in the bird's mouth. But what was the bird doing wrong? The bird was just getting its lunch for the day. I mean, jiva, 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 nam. One being is food for another being. It was just doing its daily affairs. So they said, no, no, the king can't get the karma. The bird can't get the karma. They said, oh, well, it was the snake. It was the snake's poison. The snake should get the karma. After all, it was the venom from the mouth of the snake. I said, but what wrong did the snake do? It was given a body by providence which has poison in it. And it died. It wasn't even conscious. And the snake and the poison came out. So how can you say it's the snake's fault? So Yamaraj and Chitragupta are there having a discussion. Who's going to get the karma here? We've got to do something with it. Otherwise, me and you are going to get the karma. We've got to get rid of this karma. Someone's going to get this karma. And then there was one lady who was watching the whole scene. And then she started saying, just look at the king. This is the degradation of Kali Yuga. Even our leaders in the garb of doing good work are trying to kill all of the praja. They're supposed to protect us, but just see how degraded they've become. Chitragupta and Yamaraj looked at each other and said, she can get the karma. The critic gets the karma. The critic gets the karma. In the world we're living in today, it's so easy to point fingers. Why did they turn people away from the Janmashtami festival? Without getting into controversies here. So easy to make a judgment in a community. Oh, and this person's like this. So quick. Quick to make a judgment. What is a community of love? A community of love is one in which there's appreciation, there's empowerment. We're actually trying to understand people. We're trying to bring people up. If someone comes in a community where there's appreciation, where there's empowerment, their faith will grow like anything. There were two British prime ministers. One of them was Gladstone and another one was Disraeli, and they were both brilliant at what they did. I don't know about their policies, but at their job they were good. And one person, he went to see both of them and he said, Gladstone is good, Disraeli is great. Why? He said, because when you walked in a room with Gladstone and you came out thinking, that person is brilliant. But when you walked into a room with Disraeli and then you walked out, you thought, that person is brilliant and I could also become brilliant. That's the difference between good and great. If you're able to encourage, appreciate, empower people to have faith in themselves, you know the greatest gift you can have in your life? Is someone who has more faith in you than yourself. If you have someone in your life who has more faith in you than yourself, you will grow to a level and achieve a potential that you could otherwise never achieve. That is a community of love, where everyone feels together, we move together, we grow together. It's said that in a community of love, the respect that the juniors have for the seniors rises like smoke. And the affection that the seniors have for the juniors falls like a waterfall. That is a community of love. We're all in it together. Appreciation, empowerment. Mark Zuckerberg, once he went to, not Mark Zuckerberg, so he told this story. Zuckerberg once told this story of JFK. JFK went to NASA the, you know, Cape Canaveral ones. And must obviously for some, you know, engagement. Anyway, so JFK is at NASA Cape Canaveral, and he goes into the washroom, the bathroom. So there's this janitor there, So he's cleaning the bathroom. So JFK is there, he's washing his hand under the tap, and he's looking at this janitor. And this janitor is like super inspired about his work, cleaning the toilets. Like Priyojana Poopy. Very inspired. So JFK, he looks at this janitor, this toilet cleaner, and he says, "You're so inspired about your work. Like you're toilet cleaning toilets. It's like you're inspired about cleaning toilets." And you know what the janitor said? He said, "I'm not cleaning toilets. I'm helping to put a man on the moon." He said, "I'm not cleaning toilets. I'm part of a team that's gonna put a man on the moon." Put the moon controversies to one side. But just see that, just see this culture. No one thinks I'm smaller, I'm bigger, I'm important, I'm not important. We're all together, part of doing something amazing to change the world. That is a community of love. And so Mahaprabhu is just there with Rupa Goswami, and he's just giving his heart, glorifying him. And not glorifying him like in an empty way. When you look at how devotees appreciate each other in Chaitanya Charitamrita, even that's a science. When you appreciate someone, two things are important. Be specific and be accurate. Whenever you see one devotee appreciating another devotee in Chaitanya Charitamrita, they're specific and they're accurate. When you glorify people in a general way, probably it means you don't really have, you've not really thought deeply about it. It's just like, okay, conventional. And he's such a great devotee, and he made time in his schedule. They always say that when they introduce you, which is nice. I'm not saying you shouldn't say that. What is it specifically that touches you about that person? Have we deeply thought why we appreciate people? And be accurate. Don't over be accurate to what it actually is. So this culture of appreciation and empowerment is one of the most important things in a community of love. Everyone in a community of love should be growing, and everyone should be being given opportunities to grow. Everyone should be moving up. In this way, people's faith will grow. People want to be part of a community in which they're unraveling their potential. This is one principle that's coming out as Mahaprabhu stays in Jagannath Puri, building the community of love. Here's another principle which is coming out in a community of love. A community is only as strong as the individuals are themselves. Here is Haridas Thakur. Mahaprabhu, previously we were just saying he empowered many individuals. Mahaprabhu empowered Rupa Goswami to be the Rasacharya, to understand the deepest truths of devotion. Mahaprabhu empowered Jiva Goswami to be the Tattva Acharya, to understand Siddhanta, to understand Shastra in its most profound manifestation. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu empowered Haridas Thakur to be the Namacharya. So he was just chanting 300,000 names every day. Said that Haridas Thakur was chanting 300,000 names for the pleasure of Krishna. Imagine, when I read that, I thought, did I ever chant one name for the pleasure of Krishna?
so profound, so deep. And Haridas Thakur's spiritual strength became very noticeable because of the challenges that he went through. If we were to summarize it, Haridas Thakur went through sense gratification, temptations, he went through suffering, and he went through sickness. If there's three things that can weaken your spiritual strength in this world, it's these three things: sense gratification, suffering, and sickness. These are the three things which, for most of us, if it comes in our life, it will reduce our spiritual strength. Can you think of a more powerful form of sense gratification than Maya Devi personified inviting you to enjoy with her? You probably can't. And that's what Haridas Thakur had to face. And in the face of the most extreme types of offers of sense enjoyment, his spiritual strength never waned. We have suffering in our life. Can you think, for Haridas Thakur, he had to be beaten in 22 marketplaces. That's not just physical pain. When you're beaten publicly, there's also an amount of pain to the ego as well. You know, when we suffer, it's not just the things that we're going through, but it's the perceptions of that others have of us that's sometimes even more painful. For Haridas Thakur, his faith, his spiritual strength never waned one bit. And Haridas Thakur went through acute suffering, sickness of the body. Sickness, so much sickness, so that Sanatana Goswami told him, now you're old, now you're sick, now your body is infirm, now you should reduce your vows due to this disease of the body. And what did Haridas Thakur say? My real disease is that I have no taste for chanting. That's my disease. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says the determination of the devotee should be just like Haridas Thakur, that even if the Lord comes to tell you, reduce your vows, you will chant. Haridas Thakur was just faced with all of this sickness, suffering, sense gratification. And he just kept relentlessly chanting, and not just chanting out of chanting out of love. This is Haridas Thakur, such strength. So the strength of a community, if you want to develop a community of love, it means every single person in that community should be spiritually growing. If you come back to your community 1 year, 2 years, 5 years later, and individual members in that spiritual community are not growing, it will be very difficult to manifest the community of love. Because you know what happens? When we have love, everyone becomes a servant. You know, the only way you can serve selflessly is when you're getting so much nourishment from your relationship with Krishna. When you're feeling so much love from Krishna that you don't need anything from anyone else. You're not relating to someone because they can do something for you. You're not relating to someone because you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. All you're doing is you're relating to them because you want to serve. And why are you able to serve so selflessly? Because your relationship with Krishna is so deep. When our relationship with Krishna is very weak and we have a vacuum within, then in all of our relationships we will seek to take from someone else. Then how can you have a community of love when everyone is taking? Therefore, when devotees are fulfilled, then they can serve from the heart. Not just that, when devotees are fulfilled, when they're spiritually strong, when they understand the bigger picture of life, all of the different misunderstandings and arguments here, they will become insignificant. But you know, when people are stagnant, then people argue about everything. But when you have the bigger picture, when you have the vision of eternity, when you know life is meant for so much more, What's the point in arguing here about so many things? You know, the first symptom of bhava is very interesting. This baffled me for many years, and then it made complete sense after. The first symptom of someone who has bhava, bhavini. The first symptom of someone who has bhav, shantir, forgiveness. Interesting. That was interesting. Like the first symptom of bhav, forgiveness. Why is forgiveness the first symptom of bhav? Because your mind has become captured by so much bigger, so things which are so bigger that all of the petty things of this world, you can just learn to let go of everything. Who can forgive? You have to have some power. If you have some love for Krishna, then all these things here, Hare Krishna, it won't affect you anymore. So, a community becomes strong when all the individual spiritual members are becoming strong. And then what happens is we all carry each other's faith. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada puts so much emphasis on strong spiritual practice. He did his first initiation. And then after the initiation, he told the devotees everything they needed to do. Good strategy. And then he wrote this letter. There's a famous letter. All the initiated devotees should follow the principle and should wake up from mangalarity. And it's like, oh my God, is this what we signed up to? Yes. There must be spiritual strength. They say Janadivas Prabhu and Pankajangri Prabhu are the pillars of Mayapur. They don't sit on any management committees. They're not big visionaries. They are not known as, you know, illustrious preachers. But they have incredible spiritual purity. That's what a community of love rests upon. The spiritual strength of the individuals. Now do you begin to see how all of us contribute to the community of love? How much love are we bringing to the community? How much spiritual strength are we bringing to the community? That's what's going to make the community very, very strong. So Mahaprabhu looks at Haridas Thakur and he appreciates him so much because he says, you are helping me to build the community of love because you're so spiritually strong. So we should come into the community and not always think, what will I get? What will I get from this community? I'm not getting anything from this Sangha. One devotee recently came to me and he said, every time I go to a class or this, I don't feel like I'm getting anything. But is it just about what we can get? What are we giving? What are we doing to elevate the community? To serve the community. And the best way you can serve the community is by your own spiritual purity. That is profound. So, Mahaprabhu appreciates Haridas Thakur and in this way gives us another principle. What is the time? 9 o'clock. Sorry, I've kind of just... You can see here, I don't have a script, like, so I'm just speaking, and it's like, therefore it goes a little bit off course sometimes. How do we do it now? Because this is a community of love, and I don't want to break the rules.
We have to sustain time, so...
Okay, so, but then I'm just conscious, because then I impede on other people's sessions, and then... So maybe,
Can I take 5 minutes for questions? I'm going to stop here and then we'll carry on tomorrow with more principles. But I'll just stop here because it's just important, at least even if there's a few questions, that it just helps us a little bit to just pause and digest it. Is that right?
Marge, you're going to maybe amalgamate some of this with the next session that you're going to do as well?
Yeah, this is two parts. Oh, yeah, sorry.
But we are very intrigued to hear and to be.
We have time. We have time. We are here for only this, not meeting an appointment with a Mercedes-Benz dealer or whatever.
I rescheduled my first appointment with Mercedes-Benz. Yes, okay.
We've got 2 hours breakfast time, so maybe we can carry on for another half an hour. And
half an hour breakfast.
If that's okay with everyone. And then we can start breakfast at 9:30, is that okay? Yeah.
Okay, let me pause there and then see that maybe whether there are some. And please, not just, it doesn't have to be a question, maybe you have something to add to it, something to bring to the table, yes. So there we go, and then I'm finished.
Hargisha, so my one reflection was about the 80, 20, and 20. With the 80 group, like I've heard this, they have this in business, they call it net promoter score, so you give customers feedback surveys, and then they have to rank from 1 to 10, and when they're like 9 or 10, they're called promoters, and then when they're like 0, 1, 2, they're called detractors, and everyone in the middle is just passive, so they basically don't add, and they don't really give so much. And I was thinking about when we think about a community, the people in the middle, at some point they either will move towards the 10 that's progressive, so the Shradika, Svabhavika, or they'll move towards the Ashrada. So that place doesn't seem to be such a stable position for a long period. So that's just one reflection. And then my question was about appreciation. So I really liked how you said it has to be like genuine, and I think we can tell when people give appreciation and we know it's not, it doesn't feel so genuine because it's not so specific and it's not accurate, it's like basically maybe too much or maybe too little. And how do we receive appreciation is my question.
Yeah. We are made of mercy. Is clear. When we look at our lives, where we were, where we are now, then if we're honest, we can see that we were just a combination of all the different Vaishnavas who invested in our life. Very clear. Actually, most of us, if we look at our personality and even our expression of Krishna consciousness, you can probably boil it down to 5 individuals in your life, and we're a combination of them. And of course, our own personality is there. But so we always have to remember where we came from. It was so nice in lockdown because we were doing all the different services, and then I ended up also going into the kitchen to wash pots. That was very nice. And I always remembered that because when I was 15 and I first came to do service at the manor, then Prajumna Prabhu was a brahmachari at that time. He said, I'm going to throw you into the deep end. And then he sent me to wash pots. And so I was there, and that was interesting because that 25 years had elapsed since that time, and I was right there in the same, in front of the same sink, doing the same thing, the same smell. Hare Krishna kitchens have a certain smell. And that was very nice because then you realize I'm actually the same person. But all of these devotees invested in me. And now people treat me differently. But actually, I was just crafted by them. So I think first we have to start from there to know that whatever appreciation is a reflection of those who have invested in me.
And then we have to, often they say when you get appreciation, you should think, this is what the person is telling me I should become. Mm-hmm. Oh, you are so kind. You think, oh God, I better become kind now. You always make time, really. So then you think, oh wow, this is what people are looking for. This is what will touch people's hearts. I should touch the hearts of the Vaishnavas. So, yes. And then we can also accept the appreciation as a loving exchange. That's also nice. You know, and let that person express their heart. And in that way, it's very nice for them also. So I guess these are some different things that we can do when we get appreciation. Yeah, but it's such a beautiful thing when there's genuine appreciation. In the world, otherwise, everyone's just, everything's so motivated. If our community is just a little bit natural like that, natural appreciation, it's so beautiful. It will, people will be drawn.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So it's quite interesting because I think, you know, there's so much nectar from your class, and you probably could have stopped really earlier on and I would have been extremely happy, but you're continuing to go on, and there's just so much that you're sharing with us. One question that I had in terms of the appreciation and empowerment was thinking about Haridas Thakur, and you know, and of course you spoke about his spiritual strength, which he was empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and of course, you know, every single day or every single glorification that we have in the temple, and in the Ki Jai prayers, we glorify Haridas Thakur. But I'm just wondering, and it's a bit of a controversial question, but why he's not on the altar? Because because I guess on the altar we have the appreciation of our Guru Parampara, we have appreciation of the deities, but we don't see him. So I was just wondering if you could say something about that.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting question. So Haridas Thakur in the Premadvani, he is, we are glorifying him. Of course, the Premadvani is very, very specific because Premadvani we are doing at the end of Aarti or at the end of Sankirtan, or the end of a service in which we're chanting the holy name. And therefore, specifically at that time in a prema dhvani, glorification of Haridas Thakur is important because we have just concluded that activity of chanting. And therefore, we are remembering Haridas Thakur and his absorption in chanting. And therefore, after doing an arati or doing chanting, then we are glorifying Haridas Thakur specifically, because it is cementing that mood of chanting and what we have just done and absorption we should do that with. And that's why we can say one reason that Haridas Thakur specifically is in the Premadvani, because it's specifically a prayer which is at the end of a kirtan or an arati in which we're chanting the holy name of the Lord. Why Haridas Thakur then is not on the altar, of course. On many many devotees have deities of Haridas Thakur. I think I've not heard anything specific about why or why not. Of course, the six Goswamis are there because they are the ones that structured the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and our media Guru Parampara is there. But apart from that, I have not heard anything specific on why Haridas Thakur is not on the altar. But you can put Haridas Thakur on the altar if you feel inspired. Is that okay? Yes, any other? Yes, Asha.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. you mentioned about like the topic of forgiveness, how when we are stagnant in our, say, Krishna consciousness, obviously arguments happen, and there can be times where devotees are confiding in you about difficulties they're having, and the common thing you say is, just forgive and let go, but it's really hard to do that. So is there any sort of tips you can share about how we can develop this quality to actually forgive someone and be able to move on?
Yes. Yeah, forgiveness is so difficult. One person says, God gives, gives, and gives, and then forgives. And we get, and then forget. So it's not difficult to forgive. The goal of life is not to remember all the terrible things that someone has done to you. The goal of life is to remember all the beautiful things that Krishna is doing for you every single day. But how will we be able to remember all the beautiful things that Krishna is doing for us every day if our mind is hijacked by all this negativity? As devotees, we are incredibly fortunate that we have something amazing which can help us to forgive, which is a vision, an elevated vision. As devotees, we should have an elevated vision of ourselves, an elevated vision of Krishna, and an elevated vision of the world that we're living in. Our elevated vision of the world that we're living in is that this world is meant to be uncomfortable. This world is meant to be, in some sense, a world of injustice. Because that's the feature of the material world which makes us want to get out of here. So as a devotee, when something goes wrong or there's some injustice in the world, it's easier to forgive because we recognize that's the way this world is wired. Buddha Bhagavata was talking about this in class recently. I was listening online. He said, if you're in jail and you go to the jail keeper and you say, like, and I think there's a problem with the door. It's like it's stuck. It doesn't open. You know? Maybe it needs some, you know, grease or something. No, you're supposed to be locked in there. It's locked for a reason. And then tomorrow if you go, no, I don't know, they're not bringing a menu every day. Like, they should bring a menu. No, it's porridge. You're in jail. We have an elevated vision of what this world is. So why do we become surprised? The second thing we have an elevated vision of is ourself, in the sense that we realize I'm a soul on a journey. I did so many things. Whatever's coming to me is not by chance. I did the crime. I have to do the time. We have to take responsibility. We can't just think everyone is the one causing me pain. That's what the Avanti Brahmana thought, and then later on in his maturity, he looked back at in his life and he realized, Nayam jano me sukadu kahetur. I used to think in my life that other people were the cause of my misery. I was wrong. It's all my own doing. So a devotee, they can forgive because they realize, I'm also party to the crime. I have to go through this. And these people, they are just the messengers of my karma. If tomorrow someone sends a speeding fine through the door, you're not going to chase the postman down the street. How you gave me a speeding fine? And the third thing is we have an elevated vision of Krishna. Suridam sarva bhutanam. Krishna is controlling everything and he's my best friend. So if he's allowing this situation to happen, if he allowed it to happen, not a blade of grass is moving without Krishna's hand. If he allowed it to happen, it must mean there's some progression from there. So when we have these elevated perspectives, then we, you know, see, we're so empowered to forgive as devotees. People out there, we have to try to convince them to forgive, and they don't have any of this knowledge. How you can forgive someone? Very difficult. But here we are as devotees, we have such an elevated vision. Therefore, Shanti, first thing is you'll be able to forgive. But yeah, let us remember, if we're hijacked by all that negativity, then the beauty of Krishna's grace in our life, we will never be able to see it, because we're always looking in the other direction. I don't know if that helps.
Thank you.
Yeah, so hard to forgive. Anyone else like to ask? Okay, finish. Yeah. Or someone else has a question?
Thank you.
Oh.
Hare Krishna, thank you for painting this amazing vision for the community of love within the, obviously the world, but more importantly within the house that Prabhupada has built for us. It's very nice. My sort of couple of reflections and perhaps a question within that is around this appreciation and empowerment, in that we as communities regularly need to appreciate and empower, and that requires some skill, as we identify in the questions and answers that are going on. To develop that skill require training, and to have that appreciators and empowerers within the community to guide others on how to do that. Just saying that the current ISKCON world, that we are in, the house that we're in, we have enough of that skill in order to empower each other and know how to do that.
Yeah, we need skills, we need knowledge, we need to know how to do it, but it begins with the heart. You see, like, even though we may be lacking in skills, in strategies, in so many things, if the heart is there, then Krishna will help, and the devotees will also figure out the skills and the strategy to do it. But it must begin with the heart. It must begin with inspiration. It must begin with a desire to want to appreciate and empower others. I think one of our, the devotees were doing incredible things in the early days, and they were not necessarily so organized always. But still, they were creating waves, because there was a certain spirit of community. It was a very special time, isn't it? We are sometimes disorganized, and these things are also important, because sometimes that can break down a spirit if we're disorganized and if we don't do things properly. But I think it's the spirit and the heart to want to appreciate and inspire and empower others, and then the other things will work around that. It's like in a car, you need fuel, and then you need to keep your hand on the steering wheel. But if you have no fuel, you can do what you want on the steering wheel. It's not going anywhere, nothing's going anywhere. So we need movement, and that movement is generated by that, you know, appreciation and that wanting to empower. I don't know if I'm answering your question, I'm just kind of shooting around. Is that?
Yeah, you're going towards that.
You can say if there's something specific you'd like to say.
No, I was just literally thinking about how we create that community, because that love unconditional love is our goal. Okay. That's what we want to develop.
Sometimes we just don't, we don't necessarily feel like appreciating or empowering. You're like saying like that. How do we generate that desire to want to appreciate? And
That's there. I'm just trying to say, like, we want to obviously get to the goal of creating love and conditional love. There are obviously steps in order to get there. And those steps, one of which is, as you said, appreciation, empowerment, the spiritual strength, our sadhana, and then obviously there's other principles that are coming within that. But in order to get there, each individual need that ability to grow. That growth comes from whether it's skill, whether it's education, whether it's training, whether it's something that they need to do in order to actually create that within them.
Yeah.
And everybody has it in different degrees, but everybody needs to grow together like that.
So yeah, we need to give that training, that empowerment, that, you know, that actual, so that they can practically go on and then do something. Yeah, sure. Yes, ma'am.
Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the class. Before you mentioned how the different types of faith, they have different bases. So for Svabhavika Shraddha, the basis is Shastra, versus for Lokika Shraddha, the basis is cultural factors or just society. Could you expand on how, when as a community, like appreciating each other really feels like fostering like a societal thing? Now it's, I guess, and like even growing the spiritual strength of community members feels like a societal thing. Could you expand on like how it ties into Svabhavika Shraddha, like this community, societal, like cultural change impacts the actual Shastra then, like Shraddha that is there?
Yeah, so in Krishna consciousness, we have both perspectives, that in one sense, we are carried by the devotees. We're carrying that very strong conception that I must be with the devotees. They're the stick of the mercy that's holding me up. It's the devotees. And then we have this other perspective in spiritual life where Srila Prabhupada says, on the ground, everyone can help you. And then you have to fly your own plane. So there's this all another sense in spiritual life, how we're flying solo as well. So both things are important. And in the community of love, what happens is that we're lifted by the Sangha. But it doesn't remain just there. We're lifted by a Sangha in such a way that we then directly access Krishna and develop a deeper connection with Krishna. You see what I'm saying? So it's almost like when you ride a bike and you're a kid, then you have stabilizers. And then it comes to the point where at one point you can take the stabilizers off and that's never that a devotee then thinks like, yeah, I don't need all these devotees anymore. I can do it by myself. But they develop a strength of connection with Krishna. So the strength of any sangha is that sangha is inspiring the devotees to then go to the source and create their connection with Krishna. So, and in that way, it just doesn't become just dependent on others, that I'm here because of others. But out of humility, a devotee will always, but in practice, they're always connected with Krishna in reality. So I think both things are there. Does that answer?
It helps. I think the general sense of the reflection we're getting is that the community should foster each individual to have the kind of Shastra like basis for their like spiritual strength, for their connection to Krishna. And that's, I guess, in effect what you're trying to maybe.
Yeah, it's like one, like say for example, one type of welfare work is you can go to Africa or wherever there's some kind of, or India or some place where there's poverty, and you can give them food for the day and you're helping them. But another type of welfare work is you go to that place and you build things for them so that they can farm, so that they can get their own water, so that they can. So both are types of welfare work. So the Sangha, the progressive Sangha is the second type. Not that you're just, you know, that people are just coming to you and they're just relying on you. like a spiritual master, what they're trying to do is their presence, by their presence, it's not just like the spiritual master is just there to pump up your tire. Like, okay, Maharaj is here, pump up the tire, and then by the time he comes around 6 months later, the tire's flat and he's there to pump it up again. No. So what the spiritual master is trying to do is teach you how you can do it, how you can be self-sufficient, how you can pump up your own tires. That is what the sadhus are trying to do. And so we've got to create that kind of... And empowerment is a real part of that, you know. Because what we're doing is we're bringing devotees and then we're saying, you now run out and do it. You know, don't always rely. Go out there and do it. That's a progressive sangha.